Hello and welcome to Bicycle Talk. My name is Ron Meniza. I'm here with my co-host, Fran Storch. We're here to talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. So welcome. It is July 20th, 2016. We are deep into the Tour de France, so I will probably talk about that today. I've also got a couple of little tidbits I'd like to share with people about some things that are going on in the area and also around the country, because there is there's some really interesting stuff going on. But I'm going to start out with the Tour de France, because the Tour de France is it's one of my favorites. I love to watch the Tour, and it's a it's very exciting this year. It's very close. There's a pretty tight little race going on right now. Chris Froome is, or as his friends seem to call him and all his colleagues, Froomey. He is riding with Team Sky, and he is currently wearing the yellow jersey, and he's doing a great job of defending it and keeping it. He is very aggressive, I have to say. He's been kind of entertaining to watch. He's not the prettiest guy on a bike, but he sure is an awful lot of fun to watch, because he's just really powerful skinny guy. I like powerful skinny guys. It's kind of a neat thing, you know? But anyway, this is a pretty cool race. There's the closest competitor to him at this time is, I have all these results sitting right here, is Bakke Mollema. And he is down, did I get that horribly wrong?
I don't know. I think Bauke Mollema.
Bauke Mollema. Let's try Bauke Mollema. All right. So, you know, I'm not so good at that. And he's from the Netherlands, by the way.
Yes, he's Dutch.
He is from the Netherlands. He is down by a minute and 47 seconds. That's not very far down. He has been the big surprise. Everybody's going, who is this guy? Where did he come from? And, you know, we never saw this one coming. So he's in second place right now, a minute and 47 down. A minute and 47 can be made up in the mountains. It can be made up on major climbs. And there's some nasty stuff ahead of him today. The third place competitor is Adam Yates. And Adam Yates is down 2 minutes and 45 seconds. And then our good friend Nairo Quintana is down 2:59, almost 3 minutes, which is unfortunate because he was my personal
Yeah, and Bauke Mollema was born in the Thanksgiving zone, although he's Dutch.
What in the world does that mean?
Thanksgiving zone?
Yes.
It's November 22nd and November 28th.
Oh, you mean, I got it. Okay.
His birthday's November 26th.
Okay. And then in fifth place is Alejandro Valverde, who is down 3 minutes and 17 seconds. So the difference between fourth and fifth is really close. We're talking 18 seconds apart. That's pretty close. The difference between fourth and third is very close. We're talking 15 seconds, 14 seconds apart. They're really, really close. So there's a lot of races going on within the race too. So it's a very exciting year, because this is not, you know, usually there's some pretty big spreads by now, but there's really not that big of a spread. So it's exciting. It's really fun to watch. And we do have a U.S. rider still in the top 10. That's TJ Vandegarden. And he's down 4 minutes and 47 seconds. So he's a little ways back. That's a lot. That's going to be, at this point in the game, that's awful lot of time to make up. He would have to have the most phenomenal day of his life in order to even get close to these guys again. So he's probably not going to do so well. Although if you finish in the top 10 of the Tour de France, that's not doing well. I don't think so. I think that's pretty darn impressive in my book anyway. So that's where we stand. The yellow jersey belongs to Chris Froome. The green jersey belongs to Peter Sagan, who has been just sprinting his heart out and doing a great job and picking up the points in the green jersey. And so he's in pretty good shape there with 405 points. And the polka dot jersey, or the climber's jersey, is, okay, here we go. I'm going to butcher another name here. Rafał Majka. M-A-J-K-A. You tell me. He's from Poland. And anyway, he is the leader of the polka dot jersey, which is the climber's jersey. And the white jersey is being held right now by Adam Yates. How about that? Third place and also has the white jersey. And the white jersey is the best new rider. I mean, he's a youngster. He's 24 years old. So that's very impressive. We're going to keep our eyes on Adam Yates for the next few years because he is at this point in Tour de France or bicycle racing world, he is a rock star. He's really like showing us that he's got something going on. And guess what? He's another British guy. What's with all the British guys? In the last few years, it seems like they've all just kind of come out and become like these superstar cyclists. And they really hadn't held a lot of interest over the last few years. And now all of a sudden they're coming out. So that's kind of a cool thing to see. There's obviously a pretty strong program going on in Great Britain. And so they're producing some very, very serious riders. And let's see. And then the team that is leading right now, because they add up all the times of all the riders on all the teams, and the team which has the number one spot right now is the Movistar team, which is the team. I know it's Movistar. Isn't that funny?
Movistar.
It's Movistar. But you know, we say Movistar. It's Movistar. You're right. It is Movistar. Anyway, the Movistar team is in first place right now, as far as team goes, which is, I think that Sky was in first before this, so they've actually taken that away, which is kind of cool. And then the most combative rider. I love that one, the most combative rider. That's I just think that's funny. The combative means that they're very aggressive riders that have, you know, they kind of pour their hearts and souls out when they race their bikes, and they take chances and do you know, crazy things to win races, or even not even to win the race, but to you know, aggressively pull a teammate forward or help someone out in some way. But anyway, Julien Alaphilippe is his name, and he's from France. So that's a really cool thing, because this is their race. It's the Tour de France. So it is a race that the French get very, very passionate about. And now they have the most combative rider is a Frenchman. Of course it's a Frenchman. I'm sure they're talking all about that over in France. Today's race is from Bern, B-E-R-N-E, and it goes, oh God, it is ugly. There's a horrible profile on this thing. Starts out pretty easy. It is 184.5 kilometers, so it's a pretty long race. It has two category threes as far as climbs go, which are pretty difficult, harder than most anything that we would probably ride around here. It has a category one, you don't want to know, and it has a beyond category finish. And the finish just looks just bad. I'm looking at the profile here. So it ends at 184 kilometers. At 175 kilometers, that's where the beginning of the beyond category finish starts. And so they will have a top of the mountain finish on that one. It's going to be very interesting. So should be a great day. Those two climbs come at the very end of the race. So the category one, followed by a very short downhill, and then back to a beyond category climb. This could be a day that could either take Chris Froome to the yellow jersey forever, or it could also be a day that things could change dramatically. You never know what's going to happen. One of the funniest things that happened, I guess it's not really funny, but it was definitely interesting and possibly the most interesting thing I've ever seen in the Tour de France, is that Chris Froome and another rider were, what was it, who was with, Richie Port was with him. And Richie Port and Chris Froome were riding together. Chris Froome was sitting on Richie Port's wheel, and the one of the motorcycles that has the cameraman on it had to come to a screeching stop because of people stepping out in front of them. And Richie Port ran right into the motorcycle. And of course, it's all shown on camera because it was being filmed at the time. And Richie hit hard. I mean, he really went down hard. And Chris had no place to go but into him. And then the next motorcycle that was behind them, because these motorcycles are very close to them, they're filming this whole thing. And the next motorcycle ran over Chris Froome's bike and broke the frame. So the bicycle was unrideable. And Chris Froome, in a moment of panic, didn't know what to do. He looked at his bicycle, realized that it was unrideable,
and decided to try his hand at duathlon.
Yeah, and he started running. And I've never seen anything like this. Now, I was a USA cycling official for 3 years, and one of the rules that there is in cycle racing is that you have to cross the line with your bike. That's the key. You can cross the line with your bike if you're carrying it. You can push it across the line, but you and your bicycle have to cross the line together. And when your front wheel crosses that line, you have finished the race. That's the way it works. He left his bike behind.
But he would have had to carry a mangled bike.
He would have had to carry a mangled bike, but he was not legal in doing it that way. So now, fortunately, the officials were kind to this whole matter because it was just a total mess.
Well, he was probably panicked.
He was completely panicked.
He
was not thinking straight.
He probably knows that he's supposed to stay with his bike rationally, but he was not thinking straight. He was out of his mind.
Right, and he probably thought that, you know, and which was true, that his team car would eventually catch up with him.
Can you
and
imagine?
Bring him a bike.
You're a high level race. You've got the freaking yellow jersey on.
Yeah.
You're behind your old buddy Richie Port. Because Richie Port used to be on Sky, and now
he's
on.
His lieutenant used
right.
to be his main
and
man.
And now he's on BMC.
He's on
BMC now. But they were still riding together, which was nice. And Richie Port endos. He rams into this motorcycle. They're like high level in the Tour de France. He's got the yellow jersey behind him. You know, they go into this motorcycle, and then Chris Froome goes right into him. First of all, you're in the Tour de France. That's exciting to start with. Second of all, you just had a horrible crash. If you had a horrible crash and you were by yourself in the middle of Griswold, you'd be upset.
Right.
But this is during the Tour de France. I can't even imagine what was going through his head, if anything. So he just started
running.
Well,
he wanted to get to the finish line, and he didn't want to lose any time. That's what was going on through his head.
You don't know that, though. He might have just flipped out.
He wasn't
thinking about, I have to carry my bike.
I think he's uber competitive, and he just was thinking that if he could get himself across the line as quickly as possible, that was the right thing to do at the time. And probably assumed that his team car would be there very quickly with a replacement bicycle. And it wasn't. Because his team car was stuck behind the mess that happened when the motorcycles collided with the people. And yeah. Anyway.
That was mind-blowing. That was like,
I've never
that was
seen
insanity.
Anything like it. I've been watching this for years.
I read it on the internet before I saw it, and I knew it was going to happen, and then we didn't watch the feed until the evening, and I was like, you got to see this. The insanity happened today. I can't believe what happened.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some crazy things.
Yeah.
I've seen some real, real crazy things.
but Chris Froome, there's some humor. I'm sorry. It was also sort of funny watching Chris Froome jogging up the hill.
Well, yeah, he's not exactly a runner. He's a cyclist.
I hope that some comedian took that on because it's funny. He's running up the hill. That's insanity. It's funny.
It is.
I mean,
it's really.
It was. I feel bad for him at the time, but
at the time, yes.
But it's hysterical. I have to look and see if some comedian took that on.
So there were three or four riders in front of them that were not of any consequence to the race because they were not. Ranked in any way, or they weren't in the top 10 or 15 or 20.
Yeah, I think it put Adam Yates in front.
But Adam Yates was up there, was he not?
No,
he was not up there. What happened was Chris Froome lost over a minute of time.
Right.
And that was what put Yates up in front. But the judges looked it over and they thought about it and they said, wait a second, this is so incredibly wrong. He was taken out by a cameraman. He was taken out by, really what he was taken out by was the Tifosi. He was taken out by the fans who were screaming and yelling and jumping in front of the motorcycle. And the motorcycle, in order to keep from hurting one of the fans, had to slam on the brakes. And that's what caused the whole problem. But and they were going uphill during this.
Right.
At a pretty good clip, too. And I mean, they were moving right along fast enough so that when Richie Porte hit the back of the bike, back of the motorcycle, he did launch over the handlebars and he smacked his face on the motorcycle when he came back down on the
right.
other side. I mean, he took a pretty hard spill, but never seen anything like that before.
No.
That was kind of wild. So, of course, if you want to see that, you can go on to the...
it's all over the internet.
You can go over the internet and you can Google it. Or
it's on YouTube.
Go to YouTube.
It's on The Guardian.
But you'll see it everywhere. They'll show the crash. It's pretty outstanding. I've never seen anything quite like it before. And hopefully we'll never see anything like it again. Okay, shout out to you fans that are out there watching the bike race. Get out of the way when they come through, please. Just get out of the way. I know it's hard. Everyone's very enthusiastic. It's the number one most watched sporting event in the world. There are fans everywhere, and they are not always of sound mind. And so because of various partying activities, because it is a giant tailgate, so, you know, obviously somebody made a bad move, and that's what happened. But, you know, there's a real danger to this stepping out in front of a bike race. When I was racing my bike years ago, there's a big national race that happens up in Fitchville, Massachusetts, and all the riders from all over the country that were anyone, the high-level amateurs, high-level pros, they all came to this race because it was part of a national series. And a very unfortunate occurrence happened, and that was an 85-year-old man stepped out in front of the sprint at the end of one of the races.
When was this?
This was years ago when I was racing my bike. Mm-hmm. And an 85-year-old gentleman stepped out in front of the race, and he's walking across the street right during the finishing sprint of one of the races. And obviously, he didn't make it across the street, and a bunch of riders didn't make it by him, but they killed him on the spot.
Oh.
That was it. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. But crowd control is a problem at bicycle races in. And, of course, you know, that led USA Cycling to start fencing off the finish line areas a little further back so that hopefully that occurrence wouldn't happen again. But anyway, we kind of learned from mistakes that happened throughout the years. But anyway.
So then let's talk about Nice for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, there was this horrible terrorist thing that happened in Nice on
right.
Bastille Day.
Right.
That they a van came and just yeah. plowed into
right.
a crowd celebrating Bastille Day,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think they were
there. And that was Bastille Day is a big deal in France, and it's
yeah.
a very big deal during the Tour de France because
yes.
it's Bastille Day and everyone's celebrating. And
it's kind of like French Independence Day.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Or
yeah.
it's the storming of the Bastille, and it caused the start of the French Revolution.
Fourth of July.
Yeah, and they celebrate it pretty much the same way. You know,
right.
everybody gets together as barbecues and celebrations.
Right.
Fireworks,
big parades,
all that stuff.
Fireworks, the whole deal.
Right.
right.
So this van plowed into these people and like killed at least 70 people. Maybe it's more. Tally is more.
Let's note that it was a truck.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know how I am about trucks and how much I love them.
It was a big van.
I know.
You know, and it was a big van that was on a terrible mission.
Yeah.
Well. So the next day on July 15th, because it happened after the tour was over on the 14th.
Right.
So, you know, tour finished racing that day.
Mm-hmm.
So it happened after that. So the next day on the 15th, when they did the ceremony, they ran the race as usual. But
right.
when they ran the ceremony, they didn't do the usual what everybody gets up one at a time and puts their hands up and smiles and kisses. They all got up together as a group. And this beautiful photo of them.
I'll have to look for that.
All the guys, there's Adam Yates and Thomas de Gendt. Adam Yates was best young rider that day. Thomas de Gendt was king of mountain. My boyfriend Peter Sagan is in the green jersey for the points. He's so cute. And
Fran has a crush on Peter Sagan.
Oh my goodness, he's beautiful. And then here's Chris Froome handing off his bouquet. And let me see. This is Tom Dumoulin. I guess I'm guessing Tom Dumoulin must have been the most aggressive rider that day, because I don't know what else he would be. So they're all, and he's kind of a hottie too. Anyway, there's a nice photo of all of them. They all have a black armband on.
Oh yeah, look and at they that. All, I just found that.
Yeah, and they're all
bowing their heads down a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Chris Froome's handing out his bouquet.
Yeah.
So this is all in you know, a solemn ceremony the day after the horrible events in Nice.
I've seen a number of different things happen during the tour. There have been, different statements that have been made by the riders, even where they'll have a moment where they'll just remember the riders, where one of their riders was hurt really badly or killed maybe,
mm-hmm.
and they allowed them to ride together across the finish line together, and they all rode in unity.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that? That was a couple of years ago.
Yes.
This is, it's a brotherhood. It's, people, these riders are, they're super athletes and superstars, but they're also very humanitarian.
And they're supportive of each other. And they also, the thing about bicycle racing is you win on a level playing field. So when that accident happened, when Richie Porte and Chris Froome ran into the motorcycle,
mm-hmm.
the judges decided to neutralize the race for that amount of time, and they retained their status. They retained their position.
They just hit the reset button at that moment in time.
Yes.
So they basically took from the time that the collision occurred, and they gave them their positions from that time. So they didn't penalize them for falling back because of that.
Because what you saw before they did that was they had lost their, Froome was down to sixth, and I think Adam Yates was on top, and they were all, it changed the general classification, changed the standings. But they undid that. They set it back because it was an unavoidable accident. And they do that, and they'll do that in the race. If there's a bad crash, they'll neutralize the race, especially if the bad crash is in the front. They'll neutralize the race. And neutralize the race means that nobody's gaining any time, or everybody gets the same time for a while.
Right. And the thing is, they do this in races that, like these criteriums where the flat races are going around, 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 and, they're getting ready for the big sprint at the end. They have a 3-kilometer rule.
Yeah.
And this was actually within 3 kilometers. This is also that way. But they never do it on a mountain stage. It's never done in that style of race. It's only done on the criteriums, because what will happen is they'll have these huge crashes because everybody's jockeying for position and they're trying to get themselves in place. And so they occasionally there's a crash. And if there was a contender that was way up, like let's say if Chris Froome went down, it's 2K to go, and Chris Froome went down, they wouldn't penalize anyone who went down any time off of their general time. But they don't generally do this for a mountain stage. This is a rare, rare thing. And I think it's a first. I don't remember seeing it anywhere else. I've been reading about it. I don't think it's ever happened in another situation.
It was just a situation. Crazy situation.
It's just kind of crazy a situation. But it is a lot of fun to watch if you're happen to see it. It's kind of a fun thing. So anyway, the Paris-Nice was won back in 1937 by that rule, by that 3K rule that happened. And, somebody very way up in the race went down. And it was just, he would have been last after that. But they that's the new ruling had gone in, and that's what happened. So it's a good rule. It's definitely a good rule. And it's the first time it's ever had to be exercised in a big mountain climb like that. So,
right.
Very interesting stuff. So anyway, that's Tour de France. And a lot of interesting things going on in the tour right now. I'm anxiously awaiting to hear what happened today, because it has probably happened by now. It's a good chance anyway. I don't know exactly when it started this morning, but there's big hills today. Just ugly hills at the very end too. Just where you just never want to see them. And, it's that place that'll really, really take your legs out. Fran got to have her legs taken out this weekend, because she went up to the farm.
Green Mountains of Vermont.
The farm to Fork Fondo in Vermont, and she got to ride her bicycle, get this, 113 miles.
Yeah.
We've been bowing to Fran for the last couple of days for doing that.
So get this. So I posted some nice photos on Facebook, and I was waiting for this to happen. No surprise here. Got big shout out from Don Podolsky, but he didn't say way to go, Fran. He said, that was terrific, Fran. That was great practice for the Great River Ride.
Of course.
See you in October.
See, Don puts on a ride up in the Western Mass area.
It's beautiful.
And it's a gorgeous ride. It's right when all the leaves are popping.
Yes.
And it's just a beautiful ride, but one nasty hilly ride.
It's the same distance. It's 112 miles. Yeah. If you do the Century, it's 112 miles.
It's got 8 or 9,000 feet.
It's got the same amount of climb, just over 8,000 feet. It's the same, but instead of climbing, instead of climbing gaps, you just constantly have all these crazy hills.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the same kind of ride, but it is beautiful. It's one of the most breathtaking rides I have ever done. I mean, the ride I did this weekend was also phenomenal.
Yeah.
Gorgeous, beautiful mountain
Vermont.
Views.
And you cross over the Green Mountain National Forest a couple of times.
Vermont.
It's an amazing area to ride your bike.
Yeah.
There's not a large selection of back roads in Vermont that are paved.
Yeah.
There are a number of them that are not paved. So you have a large selection of dirt roads you can ride on. But the paved roads are mainly bigger roads, and they usually have a wider shoulder, and people like to ride on them because of that.
It was rare that I felt like, oh, there's a lot of cars here. Sometimes when I would come into a town.
Right.
But it really wasn't bad, like being on Route 100 and being on Route 107.
And it's beautiful, and people are pretty used to seeing bicycles out there. Because
and they're really nice.
It's been going on for a long time.
I didn't have any bike versus, bike versus car incidents that really concerned me too much. It was pretty good.
It's not
beautiful.
Bad. So anyway.
Got to go to the Warren General Store. That was a hoot.
Yeah, and you got to climb over some big climbs, the Appalachian Gap. That's a big one. That's a really big one. That one has got some pain involved with it.
Oh,
gets a little steep at the top, 17%. If you're trying to imagine what 17% is, take your stairs and level them out a little bit. Not a lot. About 22-23% is what your stairs look like.
Yeah.
So that gives you an idea of the pitch that you're going up if you're climbing stairs.
First of all, the thing starts at mile 68.
Mm.
So you're climbing up. And the cool thing about this ride is there was stenciling on the road at various points from the Green Mountain Stage Race. So there's a stencil that said King of Mountain so many meters ahead. And so you knew that you were on a climb and that it was going to end at a certain point because of the Green Mountains. This had nothing to do with the Fondo that I was on, but it was the Green Mountain Stage Race had marked it. And so you could see that coming up. And so that was marked, and there were a few climbs that were marked that way. And the AF Gap is marked that way. So you can see how many meters it is to the top up from the stenciling there. And so my friend Karen Franzen told me that I should watch for the pond. And when you see the pond, you're almost there and you have one more nasty punchy effort to get to the top. So I was waiting for the pond and I still hadn't fallen off my bike and I was doing okay. And it was really tough. I mean, I was not going fast at all. And I was plugging. I got to 500 meters. I was almost there. And at 500 meters, I saw the pond. And I'm like, yes, I'm almost there. 400 meters. The pond's really very visible on the left, and it looks pretty, and you can see the parking lot at the top, and there's a bunch of people at the parking area on the left up there. And I kept going, and I saw two people I'd made friends with, Mark and Laurie, and Mark needed to stop. I think he was cramping, and Laurie was waiting for him a little further up. And I could see Laurie ahead of me, and she was stopped. I got to 300 meters, and I fully intended to keep going, and I almost tipped over, and I was not intending to tip over. It wasn't a decision I made. I was like, I literally almost tipped over.
Legs don't work.
Legs just stopped, and I clipped out. Thank God I clipped out. I didn't fall. Nothing bad happened.
Well, if you fell, you weren't going to go anywhere.
I know, but I'm glad. I'm really glad I didn't fall.
Because if you're going up a hill that steep, and you get to the point where you actually tip over, you're really not going more than
3 miles an hour.
Or less.
Right.
Because at that point, you've stopped.
Yes.
So you're going no miles an hour.
Yeah.
You're just tipping over.
And tipping over.
But you can still get hurt doing that. So you
gotta
watch out.
And thank God I did. I just clipped out. I was standing up. I was upright. I saw Lori, said hello. She asked me about Mark. I said, Mark seems okay. He joked with me that, did I have an extra gear for him? And he wasn't sick or anything. He was just resting.
Yep.
And he still had a sense of humor. So, and she said she had started to cramp. And I just said, you know what? I'm just going to. So I walked 200 meters.
Wow, you said it on the air. Ooh.
I don't care. I walked 200 meters and I said, you know what? I'm gonna ride the rest of the way. Because at the top of App Gap and at the top of Brandon Gap, they have a guy waiting there for you. You know, a guy from Great Adventure Bicycles or whatever, Great Bicycle Adventures, whatever it's called.
Right.
They had a guy waiting up there and he cheers for you. He rings a bell. He says hello to you. He offers you food and water and takes your picture if you want. And it's really nice. That was really a cool thing. He goes, yay, you did it.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to ride up to him. So I rode the rest of the additional 100 meters up to see him. So, I mean, if I had to walk 200 meters and I had to walk, there was a hill in the Sugar Bush Golf Course, which is legendary, apparently.
Yeah.
That wasn't going to happen. That was like 20%+. And so, yeah, guys, I walked 200 meters and I probably walked another maybe 400 meters in the Sugar Bush Golf Course. But other than that, I rode 112 and, you know, over 113 miles.
Yeah. It's a long way to ride your bike, by the way.
I did Brandon Gap, no problem. I did did Baby Gap, no problem. But then there was the descents. Holy crow. So Brandon Gap descending wasn't too bad. There were some, you know, sketchy turns, but you go through like four kind of hairpins and then it opens up and it was really fun. And then App Gap, I was terrified going down those descents. I was going very, very slowly. There are literal 180 degrees, possibly more hairpins. You would have loved it.
Oh, what fun. Oh, that sounds
really
great.
Freaky.
Oh, it sounds great.
I mean,
I
where you
those.
Turn, you're literally turning, you're going north and then you have a tiny, it's a literal hairpin and you're going south. It's crazy.
Right.
And there were two or three of those.
And, you know, how do you ride through something like that?
Well, you look past it. That's what Karen said.
That you have to look past it. That's very important. And
you look where you want to go.
You also have to read it before you get there. So you have to kind of look at it and read it before you get there. So you're looking to see, okay, so if it's going to hook really hard to the right, let's say, okay, then, and, you know, you're in a situation like that, you can also see the other side of them fairly well. So you can kind of, you know, see if someone's coming in a car, because that's important that there's no car coming, because you're going to want to use every inch of the road to go through something like that, because you're going to go shoulder to shoulder on those. And if you're going to navigate them with speed, you're going to go shoulder to shoulder.
I navigated them very, very slowly.
You take the glance, and you see, and you go, okay, I'm empty, I'm cool, I can do this. You know, I tell people, you know, run to the gravel on one side, and then, you know, you'll be in the gravel on the other side if you get it right. And if you don't, you'll be in a lot of trouble. But so it takes a little practice and it takes a little bit of a read. And of course, you know, what Amber told you about, you know, putting your leg all the way down and letting the bike turn into it, leaning the bike into it instead of.
I did that in places where I felt safer and more confident. I was very glad to have very well-functioning brakes. You should check my brakes.
Well, they work. No, your brakes are fine. Your brakes are fine.
But I'm so thrilled that I'm just happy that I made it through in one piece and I didn't fall
and get
hurt.
I am too. I didn't want to get that phone call. Could you come get me? I'm really not in a good place right now. Or I'm somewhere.
Pelvis is intact.
Or
ribs
I'm
are
somewhere
intact.
Else. Right. Yeah. But no, you did fine. You did fine. And, you know, you handle downhills better than most people I ride with, as far as, you know,
switchbacks are not my thing.
But switchbacks are just
I'm
not
still
your thing.
Let us say that I haven't learned to, I don't have practice on switchbacks.
Right.
That's why I can't do switchbacks.
And it's true. We just don't have any.
No.
So,
if I could practice on them,
we have
it would
one
be,
that I know of, Penny Hill Road.
Penny Hill Road and perhaps Marrow Road.
Yeah, and that's not even a switchback. That's just a 90-degree turn. That's all that is. But Penny Hill Road is a true, you know, it has a nice switchback at the bottom.
Yeah,
So you could practice on that. And it's just fun. When you get them down, and you come out of one of those things and you did it like right on the very edge of control, you actually get that, you know, adrenaline shudder. And Oh,
so
boy,
I must say, if the road is gentler, so there was a section, I think it was called the Route 100. They called it the Route 100 gravel or the Route 100 grinder. I'm not sure what they've called it. And I thought that was going to be another bunch of climbing after Sugarbush, which I wasn't happy about. But when I got to it, it was marked Green Mountain Stage Race. And it was a section of road. I'm not sure how long it was, but it was actually a section of road that was kind of rough. It wasn't well maintained. And it was a gentle descent, like so that without trying, you were going over 20 miles an hour. And I had no problem on that. That was fun. That was really cool. You had to navigate through the bumpy bits, which was no big deal. But it was just steep enough that I could go really fast and not steep enough that it scared me and not curvy enough that it scared me. I just nailed it on that. I actually had to be careful not to cramp because my brain was feeling good at that point, and I was getting in the drops and I was practicing my amber stuff. And if I pedaled too much, I was able to hydrate and stretch out of any cramping that I had, baby cramps that I was able to get out of. And that's amazing on a 113-mile ride. And it was hot. It wasn't hot like it was down here, but that was really fun. It's a section of Route 100 that's a descent and bumpy, and it's marked on the Green Mountain Stage Race.
Yeah.
And so I had a blast through that. That was no problem. So.
Yeah.
All right.
That's great. It's great.
So it was a good time.
Good time. Good time.
Go to Vermont.
And of course, you know, I worked, but that's part of what I do with my job.
And the next Fonda will be in Maine.
I represented my bike company and I showed off bicycles, and my bike company gave away a couple of bicycles, which is very nice. They do it at each one of these, and there are four of them in total. There's two more coming up. One is in Pennsylvania in early August.
Early August.
And then the last one is at the end of August, and it's in Freeport, Maine.
And we're going to that one.
I'm
doing the Grand Fondo. That one will be a piece of cake. I don't think there's any double-digit climbs on that.
No.
That's fantastic.
No, I don't think there is, actually.
I can't wait for that. I just hope it doesn't rain.
So speaking of long rides,
our
friend Bob, who is one of my spin students at the community center where I teach spinning, he is riding something called a pack tour. And the pack tour is a supported event where they carry all of your equipment with you, and they carry it from one checkpoint to another checkpoint. He is riding his bicycle across the country. It's a total of 32 days. One day is a rest day in the middle of it all. And otherwise, they are on their bicycles. They're averaging 116 miles a day, every day. So, there you go. So some days are less than 100 miles. Some days are, 120, 130. But it averages out at 116 miles a day. And you can check out the pictures on it right now. This is the beginning of, they call it Desert Camp is this one is called. And it, you can follow Bob along the way. There's just a bunch of pictures is what it is so far. I was hoping maybe he would blog, but he's just not an internet guy. So I told him, come on, at least, put yourself on Twitter or something like that, and then we can follow and just see how you're doing. But he just didn't want any part of that. He just wants to ride his bike, and I understand that, and that's great and good for him. So a shout out to him. They're into their they're into their fourth day today, would be of this, because it started on Sunday. So and I have flipped through some of the pictures, which are on Flickr, and you can occasionally see him, which is kind of cool. So he looks happy, as much as I could see, and that's a good thing. There's another person that I would like to point out, and this one is pretty important. Let me make sure I get him. This is our friend Mike Beatty. Mike Beatty is from Mansfield, Connecticut. He lives right here, and he is a retired locksmith, and he owned a business in Willimantic for many, many years. And he just retired a few years ago. He is also a veteran, and he has decided to ride his bicycle. And he started this journey quite a while ago. He is riding his bike 12,000 miles around the perimeter of the United States. And he is doing this to support a group called Feed Our Vets. And if you go to www.feedourvets.org, and you can look him up. They do accept donations. He is trying to get money to help. He's raising money for veterans. And because apparently there is a problem with us taking care of our veterans, we're very happy to send our young men off, but not so happy to take care of them. So anyway, Mike has made this a cause. He's very passionate about it, and he is on Facebook. If you friend him on Facebook, he will probably friend you back. If you want to follow Mike on his journey, that's kind of a cool thing. But this is something he's been wanting to do for a long time, and he has, so far, he has ridden all the way down the East Coast and all the way across the Southern Coast, all the way up the West Coast, and now he is heading across right on the border of the Canadian border and the U.S. border, and he's heading through. So he's biking. The message on the back of his shirt says, "I'm biking 12,000 miles to feed hungry veterans." Makes you realize that the retired locksmith, security company owner, and Navy veteran from Connecticut is on the road to a much higher purpose. So anyway, he lives right here in Storrs, Connecticut, and that's kind of cool. He's just riding for a cause. And so if you happen to get a chance to, I would say the best way to get to speak to Mike, if you want to talk to him, is to go onto Facebook and look him up. His name is Michael Beatty, and it's spelled B-E-A-T-T-I-E. So you can search him out on Facebook, and you will find him right there. So it's a great thing he's doing, and he could use help with his cause if you have the wherewithal to do that sort of thing. It'd be great. Yesterday was day 109, July 19th. He rode 105 miles. He left Shelby, Montana in the morning at 5:30, and the only thing moving on the sleepy town was the train. And he climbed up and out of town. Just amazing. It's just amazing to watch this whole thing. He takes pictures occasionally and shows you what's going on. So he's got a lot of, I think he's in some plains areas at this point, because it seems like all the photos that are coming through are looking like the Midwest. And anyway, that's my friend Michael Beatty, and please support him if you can. That would be great. It would be a wonderful thing. He's doing a really, really good thing for people that are in need. So, and he's got a great cause going now. He's deep into this thing now. So if he's going 12,000 miles and he's on his way back, so he's kicked off
$6,000.
Eight, right?
Wow.
Plus three across.
Yeah.
You know, I think his plan is to end up right here in Storrs, I think is the final plan. I'm not sure exactly when he'll be back. I talked to Bruce John the other day, our friend Bruce from the area, and he seemed to think it was going to be sometime in very early October that he would be rolling into town. So we'll keep an update on Mike, and we will maybe we'll do something special for Mike, but
right.
we'll see how that works. Because
yeah.
Mike tends to be kind of a soft-spoken guy, and but he's doing something that is really a very loud voice. So it's a cool thing. So a lot of people ride their bikes for causes, and that is something that we see quite often in cycling, is that there will be causes for diabetes, or there'll be causes for the Heart Association or the Cancer Society. And there are all these interesting charitable rides out there that you can do. And they are, they're kind of a cool thing, because if you're riding your bike a little bit and you're thinking about doing one of these, you can hit up a couple of your friends for a little donation here and there. I know out here we have the Hole in the Wall Gang Camp, which is the Paul Newman Camp. And they have a couple of fundraiser rides a year, and people raise a lot of money for them. The Pan Mass Challenge that happens across the state of Massachusetts, that the Dana-Farber Institute is involved with, that one's huge. That one requires some very serious fundraising, but it is that is a big cause and attracts an awful lot of attention. And they raise millions and millions of dollars. It might be the biggest bicycle fundraiser in the United States, maybe in the world. And as far as it's like a 2-day fundraiser, I think is what it comes down to. So it's very big, and it you have to raise a lot of money. But anyway, there are also smaller local events which you can participate in. There's a few MS rides around I know that I've seen that are out in the River Valley area in Hartford area that you can do. But one of the ones that is most near and dear to me and to both of us here is the Steeplechase Bike Tour. And the Steeplechase Bike Tour is right here in Mansfield / Willimantic area. And it is a bike tour which has been going on now for, 24 years. This is our 25th year. 25th year of this particular event. And it is on August 20th. I will have some guests on the show just before the steeplechase, and we'll be talking to some of the folks that it actually helps benefit, but it helps benefit local charities in our area that are in need of the extra money. And just so you know, the countdown on the Steeplechase Bike Tour is 30 days, 19 hours, 12 minutes, and 3 seconds, 2 seconds, 1 second. There we go. There's actually a countdown timer on their website, which is cool. So it's a really, really fun thing to do. There are a number of different routes that are out there. You can ride anywhere from, and there's also a 5-mile walk too. So if you want to just do it because you're very interested in raising money for a great cause and you want to go out and do the walk, you can do the walk. It's only 5 miles. It's certainly very easy to do. There's also a 20-mile bike ride, which is also probably one of the flattest 20-mile rides we have in our area, so it's reasonable to do. And there's a 35-mile ride, and there's a 50-mile ride. There's a 62.5-mile ride, which translates out to 100 kilometers, and there's also a 100-mile ride. These are all roughly in those distances. Anyway, it's just a really nice event. It's extremely well supported, and all the money goes to a great cause. So that's Saturday, August 20th, 2016. So I encourage you to look that one up, and that is Steeplechase Bike Tour, all one word, .org, and you can look that up online. So it's a really neat thing. Anyway, as you look around, you'll find that there are a lot of different fundraiser rides that you can do. And what I like about them is it gives me a way to stay motivated to keep my miles up and to look at, okay, well, I've got this coming up in 4 weeks, so I need to do, you know, this to get to that point. So it makes me lay out my training plan a little bit more. It gives me a goal and a motivation, which is always a very nice thing. It's good. It's a good cause. It's a good motivator. It keeps you fit. It's healthy. There's all sorts of great things that can be said about it. If you are riding on one of these rides, remember that we are riding in open traffic and we need to obey the laws. And I rant on this every week, I know, but I think that I need to get this point across. If there is a car coming up behind you, you need to get as far to the right as is safely possible. That is the law here in the state of Connecticut. And remember, it is as safely possible as determined by the person on the bicycle, not the person in the motor vehicle. So you're the one who makes that decision. So, but please be careful. And I know I had a discussion yesterday with a friend who we were talking about different riders that we know and of some riders who tend to like to ride out in the middle of the road a little too far and are very defiant about it. And if you are that rider, please stop. Please stop doing that, because all you're doing is making it bad for all of us. And all of us, meaning the people that are responsible, that do stay as far over as we safely can. And also the people that are stopping at stop signs and traffic lights and obeying the rules of the road, because that is truly what we're supposed to be doing here in the state of Connecticut, as well as other places too. So you want to make sure that you obey those traffic laws. Remember, you don't get respect until you give it. So, and if you're in a car and you see people in the road in front of you on bicycles and they are out in the road a little bit, or they're riding two or three abreast, which they should not be doing. Two abreast is legal, three abreast is not. Give them a quick friendly toot of the horn. Let them know that you're back there. Again, I mentioned this over and over again. We can't hear you. We cannot hear you coming up behind us. So please just give us a friendly reminder that you're back there. A simple toot of the horn works great. And at that point, we can then organize ourselves and get over and give you some room to get by us. But with our helmets on and our, the straps that hang down over the helmets and the big vents that are on the helmets, the wind that blows through those helmets makes it very, very difficult for us to hear anything from behind. So make sure you just give us a friendly toot. Give us a little wave. I always wave to riders, drivers of people in cars when they come around me, because I just want to let them know that, you know, I'm just a person on a bike, and I really, really appreciate them, you know, giving me that friendly toot and being courteous. And hopefully they feel that I'm exchanging my gratitude in a good way. And they usually wave back. A lot of people wave back now. A lot of people wave to us. A lot of people wave us through intersections. It's really quite nice the way it has changed. Most recently, it seems, as we've gotten deeper into the summer. And I think that's just a matter of people seeing us more, because it is summer and more people are out. The weather is nice. And so people are seeing more people on bicycles and starting to adjust to it. Unfortunately, we have to go through a reset here in the Northeast because we have this thing called winter. And when winter occurs, the bicycles go away and the motorcycles go away, and it's just car and truck land. And the problem there is that the people that are driving cars and trucks tend to forget that, you know, about the bicycles that are out there. And I always mention the motorcycles, because motorcycles have a tremendous amount of trouble with people in cars and trucks also. So just everybody, you know, chill. Take a chill pill, as George Carlin used to say. Just relax. You'll get to where you're going eventually. You may lose 10 seconds. You may lose 30 seconds of time out of your day to get around a group that might be in front of you. But, you know, that's not really a lot of time when you think about someone's life. So let's just be careful out there while we're riding our bikes and driving our cars. And again, you folks that are riding your bicycles, please don't get an attitude where you own the road. I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to know about it. And if you feel that way, feel free to give us a call here, and I would be very, very happy to talk to you about it. Or Fran could take information from you, and she would, relay it on to me, and we can discuss your concerns of cars on the road and trucks on the road and people in cars and trucks versus people on bikes. So anyway, that's what I have here today for the most part. I've got a few other things that are coming up. We've got, hard to believe, but we're approaching cyclocross season, which is kind of a crazy thing. And I'll probably do an entire show on that in the future, all about cyclocross and what it is and the insanity that goes along with that form of bicycle racing. But I'm starting to see people putting their races up on Bike Reg, which is BIKEREG.com, and that's where you see a lot of events posted. You'll see, not only will you see racing, but you also see area tours that are happening. If you're looking for things to participate in, that's a great place to look. And you can look at the event calendars, and you can see that they'll have road races, off-road races, cyclocross races, recreational rides, Grand Fondos, which is what Fran did last weekend, which is a timed recreational ride, basically, and hill climbs and other events that are listed there. So anyway, that's a great resource if you're looking for a great resource, and it's called bikereg.com, www.bikereg.com, and you will see a number of events that are happening. So it's a good place to keep yourself informed. There's there's some great stuff. River Valley Ice Cream Ride in Turner's Falls, Massachusetts. That sounds like a lot of fun. Might be some good ice cream involved. That sounds like a really great time. There is on July 30th, there's the Mount Washington Century. Oh boy. 100-mile ride around the Mount Washington Valley. I'll bet there's some good little climbs in there. Actually, you know, the climbs around there aren't really that bad, because that would be, you'd be dealing with things like the Kankamangas Pass, and you'd be dealing with Crawford Notch and Franconia Notch. Those are all pretty gentle climbs.
Really?
Yeah, they're not bad at all. They're really, really not bad. So anyway, there's a lot of things that are out there. There's the major, this July 24th, coming up this weekend, the George Street Bike Challenge for Major Taylor. That's in Worcester, Mass. Major Taylor was a famous bicycle person from way back, and there is a hill climb, and it's very short. It's a real short, steep, nasty hill climb, and there's been an event there going on for years now. And that is coming up this weekend. Look at that. So again, Bike Reg is the place. The Major Taylor, it's a hill climb. I'm just trying to see how long it is. It's not very long at all. I think it's less than a mile, but it is really, really steep. So as I remember, it was a very, very steep thing, but, anyway, that's kind of a fun thing that's coming up. And you see how fast you can pedal up George Street in Worcester. It's a two-block. That's it, two blocks. That's not very long at all. Quad Buster. That was a training ground for the 1899 world champion Major Taylor. It's one rider at a time against the clock on the steep uphill time trial in downtown Worcester. And it's presented by a group called the Seven Hills Wheelmen, which Fran and I did a... we did a ride with them earlier this year. They put on very nice events.
The King's Tour of the Quabbin.
Right, and it will be on Sunday. It's the fourth Sunday in July every year. The distance is 500 feet. The average grade is 18%.
Ew.
Ew, yeah. So it's an oucher. Yeah, it's definitely something that is not going to be real, real pleasant. But anyway, you can check it out at Bike Reg, and they have lots of fun things going on during it, and it's just kind of a fun thing. So anyway, you should probably check that out. That's coming up. But Major Taylor is he's 100 years ago, when bike races drew crowds that filled Madison Square Garden, the biggest draw of all was Major Taylor. New York promoters who signed the 19-year-old Marshall W. Taylor, Major, quote-unquote, Taylor, to their team in 1898 knew that the fans would flock to see the Worcester Whirlwind compete. They also called him the Worcester Whirlwind. Anyway, it's there's a whole history on Major Taylor online, and it's certainly a cool thing. Look for your local events at Bike Reg. That's a great way to find things. You can figure that all out there. We are about to wrap up here. I think we've covered most everything today. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with myself, Ron Meniza, and my co-host, Fran Storch, where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, and the bicycle business. Have a safe and wonderful day, and may the wind be at your back. And remember, every day is a great day to ride your bike.